All right, everyone, welcome to episode 24, I think it is, of Storm the Court Podcast. Your hosts here, as always, Barstool Reegs. As I mentioned last time, joined from here on out with Terrence Payne. Terrence, what's going on, man?
What's going on, Reegs? Ready for another one? I'm going to be podcasting hurt today. A little sore throat. I don't know if this is going to be Phoebe singing with a cold situation where I sound better, or maybe I just sound like shit and everyone continues to hate me.
Yeah, maybe you just need to go shoot some threes, apparently, for the Celtics. So if you do that the last 2 days, it seems like everything's cured and you're guaranteed to be the number three pick in the NBA draft.
Yeah, what was that? That was Heald's hit 85. Who was the other one? Was it Murray?
Murray hit 78, was it? Something like that?
Yeah, and I love that because isn't that the exact same thing? Isn't that the exact same thing as like the empty chair drill? You know, like all these guys look great in workouts, but like right. They're going up against a folding chair.
I guess it's different though in the in the eyes of the beholder of shooting, from three as opposed to doing a spin move against a chair.
Right. I mean, but at the same time, it's like how many guys in Division I could do that? And like an NBA three, like we're talking about some of the best shooters.
I asked James Fraschilla, who was walk on at Oklahoma.
Right.
He now works for the Celtics D League.
Yeah, the Red Claws up in Maine, yeah.
Team up in Maine, yeah. And I asked him, jokingly, I said, me and you combined, how long would it take us to get to 85? He said, well, in college, I was pretty much doing like 75 out of 100 on the gun. There so it's go. Like, I mean, if just think about it, if you're shooting corner elbow, top of key, elbow, corner, you're without anyone around, you're guaranteed to hit at least 25 by just being an average shooter.
Right. And I imagine that this was just, he wasn't, he's not running back and forth up and down the court. I'm sure this was just in motion, catch and shoot. Like it's not, he's not exerting that much energy because he's not running up and down the court. If that's that's what I'm just assuming it was,
yeah, it's probably time. Like 3-point contest. Guess.
Yeah, exactly. And I would be, we're looking at that number, and obviously that number is impressive, but I'd love to see, what an average two guard would do in the NBA, in that same situation. Like, what does J.R. Smith do in that exact same workout? And then I might be impressed when I see Heald's numbers or Murray's numbers match up against an NBA two guard.
J.R. Smith would take the ball, back dribble, and shoot a fadeaway to just make it more difficult and still probably put up, 72 out of 100.
Yeah.
So, obviously, this podcast is going to be heavily leaned on the draft. It's insane. It's a week away. I've been kind of doing some scouting reports on guys coming up. But I just realized, oh, shit, it's actually next Thursday. We're recording here on Tuesday at about 6 o'clock Eastern time. So, just a little over a week away. What is your takeaway? Obviously, I don't want to talk as much about the foreign guys, the dragon benders of the world or whatnot, just because simply I just don't know enough about them to have a true thought on it. But everything you hear is this is a two-person draft, especially from the college basketball world. Do you think it's truly just a two-person draft? What's your takeaway from the college basketball players entering the draft?
I think it definitely there's a bit of a decline after the first couple ones. Simmons and Ingram obviously are the two that we know the most. Bender's that sort of mystery because he's obviously overseas. It's a lot like I'm not trying to compare him as a player to Porzingis, but it's a lot like the Porzingis situation last year where people didn't know him, so people didn't want to draft him. But the thing is, the Celtics have the third overall pick, so I'm up in Boston, and you hear people on the radio saying they don't want Bender because, they don't know enough about him. It's like, you know what? John and Southie doesn't need to know about Dragon Bender. the Celtics brass already went over to Croatia for a week to watch him. Right. So, the people that actually need to know about him. They know everything about him. I don't think it's too much of a risk when you consider that the people that need to make, the information are the ones making the decision. Like, they have all that info on him. So I think Bender is I know Marquise Chris is sort of shot up, but I think Bender, just based on sort of the competition he's played in a pretty good league overseas. And obviously he's got a couple of stints where he's played against, international competition. I think he's got a lot of upside.
Yeah, it's definitely interesting because he's the one that you don't hear obviously much about over here. Yesterday I was watching a CBS Sports New or CBS Sports Network draft special, and that was obviously catered toward college basketball, but they hardly mentioned Bender at all. And what they said, and there was a handful of guys, they had Gillen, Zerbiak, they had Billy King, Rothstein. So, they had Parrish, they had the whole group there kind of talking. They were all high on Chris Dunn, calling him really the third player of this draft.
Right, and Fraschilla, Fran Fraschilla, and just to be fair, that Matt Fraschilla, we'll throw out all the Fraschillas in the first 5 minutes of the
Yeah,
first 10 minutes of
there
the
we go.
podcast. He's high on him too. I remember seeing tweets saying that he thinks Dunn, could be the third overall pick. I think that's what he mentioned. I don't want to misquote him, but I'm not sure about that. If you're the Celtics, that would be the third straight draft you take a point guard with your first round pick, and Rozier and Smart and Dunn, none of them are great shooters. Dunn and Smart are sort of similar in the way that, again, they're not great shooters. They're roughly the same size, and they're very good defensive players. I would give, and I'd lean more towards Dunn than I do Smart, if I'm them, if I'm the Celtics. But again, that would mean the Celtics are drafting a point guard for the third straight year. That's like Detroit Lions wide receiver territory, and you don't want to be in that situation.
You don't want to go 0-16.
Yeah, I mean, what was the only one? Was the only one the Calvin? Yeah, Calvin Johnson was like the only one that panned out.
Yeah, I mean, because you had what, Roy Williams?
I don't remember that. And like, I think
I
it was
think Roy
Mike
Williams, Mike
Williams.
Williams
Yeah.
from USC. Yeah. So, but yeah, I agree. Like, it's Dunn's in a weird situation. I'm not as high on him as others. Like, I don't think he's, and I'm not gonna, I don't want to technically misquote him, but Rothstein had something like he's a guaranteed all-star last night when he was talking. I don't see that. I think his game is interesting for the NBA because he'll have a little more freedom in terms of getting into the paint. And he's, like you said, he does have size. He's 6'4", so he's sized to finish. And he's not going to be passing the ball to, like Ryan Fizikas. He's going to be passing the ball to a starting two guard in the NBA.
Right. And I think you'll see the turnover is not as high
See,
as you
that's
would
what I'm a
think.
little.
Because he had to do so much at Providence. Like
He
you
did,
just
but he.
mentioned. I
What.
mean, yeah, there are times where he got he
He
tra
just
he
plays
yeah.
fast. He just
Yeah.
plays fast, which is my worry. And then obviously my biggest worry is the injuries. I mentioned that today in my post is, his weakness, and it's nothing he can help. It's not a knock on Dunn by any stretch of the imagination, but putting yourself in the mind of a GM, of a coach, this is a guy with two shoulder surgeries, missed nearly a whole year of college.
Yeah, but now he's had those two shoulder surgeries, and now he's had two
Right, and that's the other
pretty
thing.
healthy. He had the bug. I don't recall him being injured. He had that bug
Missed a
against
couple games
Boston
this
College.
year.
That was he was sick.
Yeah.
And then Bentel had the ankle that same game against Boston College. But yeah, so I mean, maybe it's just the he had the injuries like you mentioned, but now he's had 2 years of healthy basketball.
And that's the other side, but it's scary for me to. I wouldn't want to bet that he's a guaranteed all-star strictly because. When you think Chris Dunn, that's injury is one of the first things that come to mind, which is just again, it's a bad negative to have because there's nothing you can do to really switch that. I mean, hell, look at Sean Livingston. We're still talking about his knee, and it's been a decade.
Yeah, I mean that was an injury that happened. Yeah, a decade. I mean, I wonder what that injury would have been like, or the recovery would have been like, had it happened in 2016. I don't know how much advances we've had, but I mean that was we've seen advances in ACL tears, but that was like everything he did.
Yeah, right.
Yeah, but
So
that's just off beside the point, but.
now, do you think, and this is something that I've been debating and heard yesterday, the move to positionless basketball, who does that help in this draft from the college basketball world? They compared it now, again, we're going to get this in the next segment or whatever of lazy comparisons. The comparison yesterday was Denzel Valentine benefits because of Draymond Green.
Yeah, I mean,
Which I understand to a degree because you can play Valentine on the ball, off the ball. But let's rule him out because, you know, that's been mentioned. Is there someone else that you think can really benefit from this, you know, quote, small ball, positionless basketball that we're starting to see the NBA?
I'm not quite sure, because you did mention Valentine. That's the one that
Right.
kind of jumps right out. Because you mentioned lazy comparisons. He probably gets the Draymond Green comparison because he's a Michigan State guy as well. You're
Michigan
gonna see that from
State
some people.
Warriors.
But it's the one that pops out of my mind. I don't know if there's another one that comes up in your mind, but yeah, that's the one that I thought of right off the bat.
Yeah, I mean, well, I mean, if I was thinking something like that, it'd be the Scals and the Marquise Chrises of the world because they don't have to be traditional centers.
That's
You know,
a good point.
back 15 years ago, if you're 7 foot, 6'11", you're sitting your ass in the post no matter
You
what.
know, I guess you got to go with Thon Maker,
Yeah.
who, as you know, is a hybrid of Chris Paul and Kevin Durant, according to YouTube and people that never watched him play an actual game, an
So what,
actual full
Orangeville
game.
Prep? Is that right? That's
Yeah,
his prep school up there in Canada.
I watched him play one time at the Hoop in person at the Hoop Hall Classic, and it wasn't a great game. For him personally, but yeah, I think that's another guy that sort of probably benefits from that because he's obviously has sort of perimeter skills for a guy that's 7 feet tall.
I don't remember the last time, and maybe you can, it's slipping my mind, the last time there's been a prospect like Thon Maker where no, like nobody really knows anything about him, yet there's a ton of intrigue. Like from a true domestic standpoint, because I guess he's not technically domestic, but when you play in Canada, you might as well be
Yeah, I
playing
mean,
in the
he
US.
was. What school was he at before the Athletes in Orangeville Prep Athletes Institute, where the hell it was? Oh yeah, he was down in Virginia.
Yeah, that's right.
Yeah, but yeah, so I mean, like, and he did play on the AAU circuits, the UAA, the Adidas Uprising. So like, people have seen him. Like, he's been in the States, and I think this is a. I know the Celtics have 8 picks, where they're obviously not keeping. What's the other team that has a lot of picks? Because either one of, I know there's another team that has a lot of picks, and either one of them should take a flyer on Thon Maker. Like, I don't know if he fits the Celtics system,
Right.
but like, if you
They could
have
stash him for a year.
if you have I think they have like five top 35 team five top 35 picks. Like, you're not gonna
I
use
know they
one
have
of
eight
them.
in the draft.
They have 8 in the draft. They have 3 in the first round. I think
They have like the
they have
first
the
or second pick
35th.
of the.
They have the 35th and the 31st. So you have two early second round picks
Right. If
and
he's sitting
three
there at
first round.
35,
If you're sitting at 31, if you're sitting at
31, yeah.
26 or whatever, I mean, why not?
Now, who do you think? Is there somebody from college basketball that you think will end up falling to, late first round, early second round, that you can sit there and say, they're going to outplay that? You know, the Draymond Green type of, the Draymond Green type of, oh, everyone's, no one should have passed on this guy because he's outplaying, his early second round pick.
I know what
So
you're gonna.
I have one in mind for me that I don't understand why he's falling so much. And I want to see who you come up with.
Well, I'll let you go first because you. I think I'm. I was gonna say the one you're thinking of.
For me, it's Malcolm Brogdon.
Okay, that's the one I was gonna say. I was gonna say that one. Not the first one. I was gonna say your boy Demetrius Jackson.
Oh, so yeah, I mean, Jackson, yeah,
Like
I'm a
I you know
Jackson fan.
I'm on Draft Express right now, and he was like a couple
He was
weeks
in.
ago. He was in the lottery area, and now
He
he's
fell to number.
24.
I think I even saw him in the second round. I want to say, I forget it was on Draft Express or NBA Draft. I think I saw him in the second round earlier this week. But for me, Malcolm Brogdon, I don't understand how he's falling. No one, not really projected to be a first round pick, at best, late first round. It's kind of like Justin Anderson from a year ago with Dallas, where he falls a late first round, ends up, starting playoff games. Dallas fans want more of him. Brogdon was probably the best two-way player in college basketball last year. He's not really undersized. So I don't know if it's just an age thing. I don't know what. But for me, I would absolutely, again, if you're the Celtics and he's available down, what do they have, pick 25 or something like that?
Who's that, the Clippers?
No, I'm thinking, what's the Celtics pick in the 20s? They have 23?
I think they're 23rd.
23? I mean,
Yeah.
if I'm the Celtics again, I'm taking the risk on Brogdon there at 23.
Yeah, and I'm big on Brogdon too. I mean, I think I don't know how he's going to be as a pro, but I mean, what's the worst case scenario if you're Malcolm Brogdon? He's like a great locker room guy and he's great in practice and he gives you six fouls. Like, yeah, that might not be worth a first round pick, but I mean, I think he's going to be a lot better than that. Guy plays great defense. He's a, you know, he's a good passer.
Good shooter.
Good shooter. Like, comes from a, like a winning culture. I mean, Virginia, you don't really think of them as a basketball powerhouse, but the last couple of years, I mean, like,
guy and won. He has experience playing. You know, he was on the, what was it? The, not the FIBAs or whatever the tournament was this last year with Murray blowing up. Yeah, oh, I guess it was the FIBAs.
The Pan Ams.
Yeah. He played on US in that. So it's, it just, for me, I'm just shocked. And again, I guess I shouldn't be shocked because a lot of it does come to age of why Brogdon's not being talked about more. You know, I'm not saying he should be a top 10 pick, lottery pick, but sneaking into the top, you know, top 20 range.
Yeah, but at the same time, you know, it's not really an age thing if you have Dunn and Hield, who are both 22, and they're probably top six both picks.
Top six, yeah.
They're definitely top 10. I don't know where they fall in that, but I would say they're both top 10, and I think Dunn's probably top five.
Yeah, I would agree. I'd be shocked if – I'd be – for me, if I'm guessing right now, the way it plays out, I think Hield will end up going to Minnesota at five. Dunn goes number six to New Orleans.
You said Dunn six. Where do you have Hield?
Five.
Oh God, people in Boston are all about Buddy Hield.
See, I think they'll take Murray. Like if you're Boston and you're debating between Hield and Murray, why not just take the guy that's 3 years younger? Buy yourself 3 years with him.
Yeah.
I mean, is there really that – to me, there's not much of a difference between Murray and Hield.
My only thing about that is when you're drafting Murray, now you're drafting a guy who probably is trying to position to point guard, but he's a shooting guard.
Right.
I didn't realize he was that tall. I always thought he was shorter. They have him listed at 6'5". I always thought he was shorter than that.
Yeah, I think he's really about 6'4", I would say. Okay. But although I don't know what if that's an official lately. Yeah, I thought he's about 6'4".
I don't care what he is. Like,
yeah.
You know, roster heights or whatever. I'm probably like 6'3" in the NBA.
Yeah, exactly.
But yeah, I mean, yeah. Again, now you're looking at a guy who's – where does he fit into an already crowded backcourt? I mean, and the Celtics still got to decide on like guys like Turner and all that. Like,
yeah, but at least you got somebody who can shoot now.
That's true, but, you know, how are his shooting numbers compared to Buddy Hield's?
Well, that's what I'm saying.
Obviously, in the no defense drill, Buddy Hield's got the edge.
Yeah.
By 13.
But, I mean, they both shot in the mid-40s.
Yeah.
40% last year. For me, it's just, you know, if you're debating between the two, and you're a team like Boston who can afford to take a guy like Murray over Hield, you know, you don't need that 4 year. I mean, because think about if Murray... improves his game over 3 years. I think Hield's who he is. You know, we saw his improvement from freshman year to senior year. I think the Buddy Hield we saw last year, like, that's peak Buddy Hield. Like, he's not going to get that much better. He might get a little bit better with his handle, maybe a little bit better with passing, but he's not developing anything new.
By the time you guys will be reading or listening to this, you know, a couple of you will listen to it early, but tomorrow, if you're listening to the blog, my scouting report tomorrow is on Buddy Hield. And I was talking to a friend of mine and said, I asked him, I said, okay, who would your comparison be for Hield? Because I was kind of struggling with it. And he just goes, honestly, I feel like he's just a better Jody Meeks.
Yeah, and I've said that too. Like,
Which is true.
And that's not like...
It's not a knock. It's not a knock.
Jody Meeks has been in the league for 10 years.
Exactly. He's been in the NBA for 10 years. He had, you know, a couple nice years. Now I still think he can be a rotational player. Like, again, Buddy Hield doesn't need to be a star in the NBA, especially if he goes to a Boston or a Minnesota. He doesn't have to be the guy. He can defer to an Isaiah Thomas or he can defer to a Karl Anthony Towns. Hell, even Wiggins. He just has to be the number two or number three guy.
Yeah. And all he's just going to be a knockdown three-point shooter.
Right. And I mean, he started developing a little bit of an ISO game and driving to the rim.
That's what he needs to be a really good player. And again, great locker room guy, hardworking guy. Like,
everyone loves him. I mean, I don't know one person that really cheers against Buddy Hield. You know, it seems like every year when there's the guy that's, you know, kind of breaking out or having the big year, someone's always wanting to talk shit about him. I think everyone in America loved Buddy Hield this year.
Yeah, I mean, no one could understand a goddamn word he said, but like, no. You know, but yeah, again, just a very likable guy and has a great story to him. You know, when he comes from the Bahamas and you find out about, you know, all the people living in his bedroom when he growing up, and what was he shooting on, like a homemade
beach basket?
Yeah, shout out to James Naismith with that one. Yeah. But yeah, you know, we mentioned you know, some of the top prospects, but you know, another one in the top 10 is Henry Ellenson. And me, you, and Raphael Johnson from NBC Sports had a fun time on Twitter a couple weeks back regarding the comparisons to Henry Ellenson.
Yeah, so we'll go into this. Speaking of comparisons, like we just kind of said with Heald and being a better Jody Meeks, the fun thing around this time is just, I call them the lazy comparisons, where, and it's and what it really is white guys have to be compared to white guys, Europeans have to be compared to Europeans,
lefties have to be compared to other lefties.
Lefties, and tall, skinny, black guys that can shoot are Kevin Durant.
It's the Jalen Rose 2015 NBA draft analysis.
Yes, exactly. So I think what we want to see, how many can we name? You know, I'll throw out the prospect and just throw out a couple names that we'll see.
Wait, well, we got to go back to the backstory. How did this, that night on Twitter? Oh, yeah, that's what it was. So people in Boston and Boston radio, they just don't watch basketball. And one of the guys compared Henry Ellenson. No, he didn't compare him. He just called Henry Ellenson a big stiff.
Yeah, that was it.
A big stiff. Have you, like,
the guy who grades excellent in transition.
The guy who led fast breaks.
Right.
And that sort of like sparked the whole, you know, who are we going to compare him to? Big stiff is, you know, code for a white guy.
Right, exactly.
And so, that sort of led to the comparisons of, oh, he's going to be Kevin Love, Dirk Nowitzki. Who was the other one threw out there? Yeah, those are the two.
Brian Cardinal.
Brian Cardinal and Brian Scalabrine. That's just straight up racist. That's just real racist.
It's not as bad as the one that we saw today that I
think about
that.
Think about that for a second, though. Think about that for a second. You have Henry Ellenson's either going to be that white guy named Brian or that other white guy named Brian, according to one publication.
And the other one that I saw today was even worse was Troy Murphy.
Just here's
a tall white guy that can shoot.
Yeah. I mean,
I'm waiting for Mike Dunleavy to get thrown out there.
Let's like go really back in history. Like, let's just compare him like Dolph Shays or right. Fucking like Kevin McHale, Bob Pettit. Like, let's just really throw it out there.
I mean, and what this is preparing you guys for draft night when you hear when the NBA guys who don't really pay attention to college ball are just starting to compare them because, oh, they kind of look like that guy or they heard one thing. Yeah. Oh, he has a jumper like Kevin Love. Therefore, he is Kevin Love.
Right.
Brandon Ingram is Kevin Durant. That's all you're going to hear.
Right. And, you know, in November, Ben Simmons was LeBron James.
Right.
And now we're criticizing him for not living up to that expectation. Like, you know, the expectation that people not named Ben Simmons put on him.
The other one that we're starting to hear a lot is Domantas Sabonis, who's another player I really like. I think he's going to be really good in the NBA. But he is Marc Gasol. He is Luis Scola. You might as well just compare him to his dad. Let's just start saying, hey,
he's
Arvidas.
He's Arvidas. He's got a lot of Arvidas in him. That's what I want to hear on draft night.
I really hope Jalen does it. Like, I really hope Jalen does just.
Nah,
I want Jalen just to own it.
I want to parlay the Henry Ellenson draft analysis. I'm going to go Kevin Love.
We're going to hear a lot of Kevin Love.
And I'm going to go for a plus. I want to hear motor, hardworking. One of the combinations of that.
Brings his lunchbox to work.
Yeah. I want, like, blue collar. One of those, like, hardworking motor labels. And then for, a critique. Not athletic. I want that.
Athleticism.
That three right there. That three. Kevin Love.
Throwing quickness, too.
Yeah. Quickness. Explosiveness. I want those three, and I want to win something out of that. I don't know what I want to win, but I want something if that happens, if and when that happens.
I mean, it's just funny seeing this, and I think a lot of the average fans fall into it, too, of – because you hear the guys that, you know, And not to knock the NBA guys, they know the NBA game extremely well. But when you're trying to compare, all the comparison game is the what if game, and it's my least favorite thing because it's something that's always said on Barstool and whatnot. Well, if my uncle was a woman, he'd be my aunt.
Right? Didn't I text you? Yeah, I texted you something like that the other night.
Probably.
If my grandma had wheels, she'd be a trolley.
Right. Right.
I don't remember what that was in response to.
Was it about the Chris Dunn is John Wall if you would have went to Kentucky?
Yeah, that's exactly what it was. Give us a little context on that one.
So that again, during the CBS Sports draft special I was watching last night. Now, our guy Rothstein, who I mean he's great at breaking news, he's a nice guy. Great at sending out motivational tweets.
Don't understand how he's not fat. He eats like a goddamn champion.
He was on a tear, and I wish I recorded so I could go back and count exactly how many times he said if Chris Dunn went to Kentucky, he'd be John Wall. If Chris Dunn went to Kentucky, he'd been the best point guard in America last year, not Tyler Ulis. It was just constantly, if Chris Dunn went to Kentucky, this. If Chris Dunn went to Kentucky, that. And it's like, well, he didn't. He went to Providence. He was there for essentially 3 years.
And he still was the best point guard in the country.
Right. I mean, yeah, he's
I think he's the best point guard. What was Ulis? Was Ulis second team or first team All-American? I think it was first team.
It was depending on, on the AP.
Whatever one. But, like, I still, at the end of the day, I think if you polled most people before and after, they'd say Chris Dunn was best point guard.
Yeah, I mean, Ulis won all the awards. If you're talking best player versus, like, who had the better year, Ulis had the better year. But Dunn is obviously the better player. He's obviously the better prospect. But it was just constantly that. And it's just, I hate that what-if game. Now, I understand, like, draft analysis, that's kind of what you're doing is, well, what's his ceiling, what's his floor? But I don't think it's fair to compare or to say, well, if he would have went to this school, he would have been this. Well, if Ulis would have went to Michigan State, is he Keith Appling? Like, right. it just doesn't make any sense to me. So, and that's what kind of triggered this, along with the Henry Ellison, is just the lazy comparisons. And I'm trying to think of some other ones of who we'll hear the lazy comparisons of.
And I would love to keep this going. So if anyone on Twitter wants to like throw out,
yeah, well,
like
I'll comparisons, throw out.
Like this is so much fun. Just like we had a ton of fun that night, me, you, and Raf just sort of going over the Henry Ellenson comparisons. Like that was hilarious. You know, like
Dragon Bender will be Kristaps Porzingis.
Oh, without question.
That because he might go number four too.
I don't know enough about this Furkan guy to comment on him.
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, let's just call him.
I know the kid can he can dunk. I saw one last year in the FIBA World Championship, something like that.
University Games or something.
No, it was FIBA something. He slammed on some poor soul.
What's the that's the other one I heard yesterday. I was laughing. The French guard. I can't. It's like Lualu. I can't pronounce his last name. Luaku or Lualu. And I forget if it might have been I forget if it was on CBS or not, but somebody was just like, well, you know, he can be Nick Batum. I'm like, you're just comparing a Frenchman to another Frenchman.
This is my favorite one. Going back to NBA DraftNet. Jakob Poeltl, the center from Utah. Guess who he's compared to?
Oh, was this the – I saw he got compared to Bill Wennington.
No, it's not. It's not this one.
I didn't see
you. Again, Jakob Poeltl, the Utah center, got compared to Andrew Bogut, a former center.
Yeah,
I forgot to add the other adjective there, white.
Right, another white foreign center that spent a couple years in Utah.
It's unreal.
It's just, again, I'll throw this out on Twitter tomorrow. Hit us with your best lazy comparisons. We threw out a couple. I know we're missing some for Henry Ellenson because you can go a long while of just listing, you know, white guys that can step out, kind of handle the ball and shoot, because that's all he is. That's all he's going to be. Poeltl's another good one because it's just like any big white stiff. Like I'm waiting for like a Sean Bradley.
I was going to say that Sean Bradley, Zildjurnas Nikauskas.
Yeah, Zildjurnas will be a good one. There's a ton, and you can go down the list. I mean, Demetrius Jackson is just going to be Jerry and Grant. Like, it's just, it's just all, it's what, it's just, who is the person before them that has either tied to their school, their left-hand dominance, or the country that they're from? Like I said, I laughed my ass off at the Lualu to Nick Batum. Just, you're just comparing, like I said, you're comparing one Frenchman to another Frenchman.
Yeah, I mean, it's going to be fun, especially if Jalen's back, because Jalen Rose got grilled last year by NBA players for his comparisons. But
so that's kind of it for the draft talk. We might hit you next week. I'm traveling next week, so we'll see about that. Heading into it. Obviously, we're in the middle of the finals. Talking about the NBA, what's your takeaway? What happens the last couple of games here?
I was ready to. I was ready. What were the Cavs or the Warriors? What, +7 or -7 without Draymond Green?
Something like that.
I was ready to bet it all on the Warriors to just take it home. But I mean, now we go back to Cleveland, and it's going to be interesting. Now Kyrie Irving showed up.
Yeah.
You know, they can go back. You get to Game 7, anything happens. So that's my only thing. But this would be, if the Cavs win this, like, this would be incredible comeback.
Yeah, like,
this is a team that's, you can just tell, is not better than the Warriors.
Right.
Like, they're just not better. No. And that's one thing I've been saying people to a lot of LeBron haters. How many times has LeBron been had the better team? Like, he's the best player in the world. How many times
has
he
been? There's been probably two times. The Mavericks series.
Mavericks, Oklahoma City.
Oklahoma City. Maybe one of the Spurs.
And I was about to say the same thing. Maybe one of the Spurs. So, you know, it's not like he's losing with a better team. He only lost with a better team at least once, maybe twice.
And that's what drives me wild I've said this numerous times. People want to knock LeBron for getting to the finals. You know, yes, the Eastern Conference weaker, especially, like, you know, when Jordan was in the Eastern Conference was better than the West. Jordan played some shit teams in the West in the finals. Like the Jazz teams he played, they were just the best of old guys. Like Stockton and Malone weren't young. They just outlasted the Rockets and the Sonics.
It's one of those weird situations where like Tom Brady before they beat the Seahawks. If Tom Brady had lost the Seahawks, he's 3-3. And people would have been saying, oh, he would have been better off not making the Super Bowl.
Exactly.
That's like the weirdest way to like critique a player. To get to the finals, especially if Brady had lost that last Super Bowl, to lose three Super Bowls while you're on the fucking sideline, that's insane. Right. To criticize a dude for that. But it's the same thing with LeBron. Again, he got to the finals. That, you look at the roster, if you hold the 07 or the 15 finals against LeBron, you are Chappelle Show status hater ball.
Yeah, you're just
like that. That's how big of a hater you are. If you want to hold that against him.
What cracks me up though is people won't hold like the 04 series against Kobe, where he was awful that series. They lost to a Pistons team that honestly they probably shouldn't have lost still.
That was the one. That was the team with Malone and Payton too.
Yeah, and but because it was this Pistons team that ended up making the finals the next year, it got accepted. I think it's just the Rashid factor. Like everyone just loves Sheed.
I mean, I mean the LeBron stuff. Like we criticize him so much. Can you imagine if LeBron had the games like Steph Curry had the first couple of games of series?
I tweeted this out yesterday, and the response will make you laugh. I said pretty much exactly what you said. I said, I cannot remember a time where we've had, in any sport where we've had such a great and dominant player who people want to dismiss so quick for his talents and like his accomplishments. And someone responded within the first 5 minutes saying something along the lines of MJ had more to prove, like had more people that doubted him or something like that. And it was just like, you're really arguing with me about who has more people to prove?
That there's no one who's more scrutinized than LeBron James.
It's impossible.
LeBron James is the Michael Jordan of being scrutinized.
Yeah, exactly.
You know, like he's the greatest of all time. But like you have people coming out of the woodworks. And you know, Michael Thompson obviously has a rooting interest in this series. I'm going to quote it. LeBron couldn't have survived in the 1980s with the physicality and the words guys said to each other back then. He said physicality. Go back and look at the fucking arms of the guys in the 1980s.
Like I said, Fat LeVer was a second team All-NBA player in 1986, 1987. You're telling me, and he was great. Don't get me wrong. He was a good player, good defender. LeBron's the size of Carl fucking Malone and can handle the rock.
Yeah.
Not to mention, you couldn't play zone back then, so it's not like you can kind of sag in the paint. Like, that was literally illegal back in the 80s. Yes, did they get away with harder fouls? Sure.
Hand-checking, all that shit.
Hand-checking, sure. LeBron would probably be better suited off playing in the 80s. Just because if people tried to hand-check him, it's a guy like, you know, like 6'3", 210 pounds trying to hand-check him.
Like LeBron,
and we saw what happens. With
LeBron
that.
James, yeah, he wouldn't have survived in the NBA because he would have been fucking charged with murder for killing every guy who tried drawing a charge on him.
Oh yeah,
that's what would have happened.
He would have. I mean, He would have been Wilt Chamberlain. Like, you know, people always want to talk about how like Wilt Chamberlain was just dominant because he was just so much bigger than everybody else. Well, that would be LeBron in the 80s.
And I'm so sick of this, like this. You know, oh, the Bulls would beat the Warriors or the Lakers or the Celtics or would beat the Warriors. It's like, I don't give a shit about that argument until Magic Johnson and Michael Jordan go rally that team together right now.
And go back in time.
In Mighty Ducks style, D2 sort of rallies the group together, brings them, you know, that opening scene from Mighty Ducks 2 where they just goes and gets everybody, hey, we're getting back together. And then
they need
the
to
Warriors.
Find a time machine to go back to their skill set in 95-96.
No, I want what
you
it?
Want it now.
I want Magic Fat Magic Johnson to play Steph Curry right now. If you truly believe it, prove it.
It just, the whole thing just cracks me up. The fact that people don't think. And not only that, but how quick people are dispensed. Like, well, LeBron's not a great shooter. Well, he has a better three-point shooting percentage for his career than Michael Jordan. And it's like, well, Jordan didn't – the three-point line wasn't as important, but Jordan's prolific from 17 to 20 feet. I'm like, yeah, Jordan was probably the best shooter from 17 to 20 feet. Three-point line's 23 feet or whatever it is, 23-4.
Statistically, LeBron will be better than Michael Jordan when it's all said and done, statistically. Right. You look at every statistic, he will probably be better than Michael Jordan. But, like, the one thing is the rings, and, you know, Michael's 6-0, and it's like, all right, that's fine. So, LeBron...
He had a better career. Like, there's a difference. There's a difference between better player, better talent, like, more talented, and the most accomplished. Michael Jordan will always be the most accomplished basketball player, unless Steph Curry rattles off 8 rings in a row or something like that.
Yeah,
He will always be the most accomplished player.
Yeah.
Jordan is just unbelievable. Like, his skill set is unbelievable. Like, again, he's the size of Carl fucking Malone. And the way he can handle the ball, the passing, he's one of the 10, 15 best pass. He's on my Mount Rushmore of passing.
You fucker.
We gotta end with the Mount Rushmore.
Well, no, we'll end with the Mount Rushmore. We haven't talked about the Derek Willis mugshot yet.
Right. So this is one. I stole the tweet from your text to me yesterday.
Yeah. Because I texted multiple people this, and people had forgotten about the Evan Nolte.
Yep.
And, like, I'm so happy you remembered. That's an all-timer. That rivals fucking Nick Nolte.
Well, I was going to say, it's a Nolte tradition to get arrested and have a mugshot wearing a Hawaiian shirt, apparently.
That was a great one.
But you're texting me yesterday. Obviously, the Derek Willis news, he got arrested, thrown in jail for a couple hours of public intoxication. Again, it's not a huge deal. I mean, what's the problem is it sounded like he was possibly driving or just got out of a car. That's all kind of unknown. They just said the door was open and he was laying on the street. Obviously, you don't want to be passed out on the street. But I'm never going to blast a kid for drinking, let alone when it's 10 days before your 21st birthday. I'd be a hypocrite for that.
Yeah, I know. I saw a tweet saying, like, oh, he's not even 21 yet. It's like, okay.
Yeah.
All right. How's the air up there on your pedestal? But, you know, this probably is more suited for, pardon my take, but clutchest pass out of all time.
Yeah.
Clutchest pass out of all time. Think about it. He was 10... seconds away from public drunkenness becoming DUI.
A DUI, which...
Then that's the best case scenario. If we really want to go dark, worst case scenario, he's dead.
Right. And I mean...
Clutchest pass out of all time.
If he was the one that was...
The setting sucked. Middle of the street, not good. Like, but the timing could not have been better.
And if he was the one that was driving... Again, this is all unclear. It's allegedly that he was the driver getting ready to drive, whatever. But yeah, it absolutely is. Because it's a DUI. It's not obviously not funny anymore that he's just... taking a happy ass mugshot. He's literally spending a couple days in jail. Probably, you know, luckily it's for him, it would be far enough away from the season. He might, you know, he's not facing suspensions or anything like that. As opposed to if you do it in like January. What did crack me up though, and this is a Kentucky thing of what I've come to learn, when they asked him where he was, and all I could say was Northern Kentucky. It's not necessarily wrong, because what I've learned is, like, anything, like, 20 miles north of Lexington is just Northern Kentucky. Doesn't matter what county you're in. Doesn't matter what. That's the correct answer. So I think he was kind of – you know what? I'll give him credit. He answered correctly in my book.
And since we're talking about Kentucky, Marcus Lee, officially to Cal.
Officially to Cal. The worst-kept secret in the world.
Yeah, officially to Cal. I mean and he's not a graduate transfer, so this is a situation where Cal needs him now, and they don't have him now. So that's, you know, it's I guess it's a good situation. It's a better week than they had 2 weeks ago when Jordan Matthews transferred on him, and Ivan Rabb stayed, but you know he doesn't have too much help around him. And again, Marcus Lee's not going to help. He's only going to help in practice. So
yeah, but at least it's again they can spin it the right way if. To keep fans happy. Like, hey, look, we still have another star for next year. Another big name for next year, I should say. Right. Whether he's a star, we'll say. But so that's it. We're gonna end with something new that we're picking up from a lot of the ESPN guys that love doing this, and that is the Mount Rushmore of anything.
I hate it.
It's jumped a shark. It's jumped a shark.
It used to be
a fun argument, like who's on your Mount Rushmore of Kentucky basketball players, of Duke basketball players, of whatever. But now it's literally everything. I heard it the other day. I was driving. I had a country radio station on, and they were getting ready to play a Waylon Jennings song, and they said he would be on the Mount Rushmore of country music. We're now getting into music. I mean,
I hate
everything
it.
Now.
I hate it. And here is my argument, and I tweeted this out. Some people took it, some people realized it was a joke, some people actually didn't realize it was a rhetorical question. Here's my argument against using this as a metric to define your worthiness in sports. Is Mount Rushmore even on the Mount Rushmore of U.S. monuments? And it's not. It's probably not. It's probably, even if it was in Washington, D.C., it wouldn't be. The reason why it's not, it's all the way in goddamn South Dakota, and I'm just so tired of using this as like a metric to just... talk about how great a person was. The only time I will give a shit about your Mount Rushmore of sports is if you dangle from a goddamn mountain and chisel four faces into granite. Like, I'm so tired of it. Like, the only reason why this is in the sports lexicon is because ESPN in 2009 needed hours upon hours of you know, content to fill for SportsCenter, and they came up with this stupid idea. I hate it.
Hate flow out of you. Hate in your heart, let it
reason,
out.
The only other way I will enjoy your sports of Mount Rushmore, start comparing them to the people on your mountain. Like, oh, he's like George Washington because, like, that's the only way I will actually give it
any sort of thought.
Then you
can only have white
guys
on Mount Rushmore.
It's just, oh, God, it's the worst. That and elite quarterbacks – and the fact that people think the Arthur Ashe Courage Award it actually means something.
Just remember, you can't spell elite without Eli.
Oh, yeah. You definitely can because he's not elite. You know, that's another thing. Like, elite quarterbacks. Like, if 12 guys in the NFL are elite quarterbacks, you've now drastically changed the definition of that word. It's no longer best of the best. It's just above average. And then the worst thing ESPN has done is the – and I mentioned it, the Arthur Ashe Courage Award. Outside of the name Arthur Ashe and everything he stood for, that's the stupidest. It's a meaningless award that everyone got worked up about last year. Every person got worked up about that. So, I hate everything. I'm just so mad.
Yeah, you brought up Mount Rushmore. You're embracing that Boston in you.
Oh, what? We just hate everything.
Just hate everything.
I guess not even from here, but I'll take it.
So, with that said, we are still ending on Mount Rushmore questions. My one to you this time is: what is your Mount Rushmore of Henry Ellison comparisons? Who are the four?
Might actually enjoy that one. Because, yeah, like you said, they all have to be white guys. So,
just like Mount Rushmore.
All right, we're done. We're done. We're leaving. We're ending on a very sour note for me.
All right.